When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
And it is Aleksandar Mitrović, the main man, stepping forward. But can David Marshall keep him out? And Marshall has saved! Yes! One big yes! It's a happy ending for Scotland for a change!
Oh, God.
Hello and welcome to the Terrace Podcast, the podcast that celebrates 0-0 results the way England celebrates semi-final defeats. My name is Craig Cairns. I am in your area and I am joined by the Don himself. It's Mr. Tony Anderson. How are you doing, Tony?
Hello. Hello, Craig. That's quite the introduction. I'm large. I'm bald. I suppose I'm getting old. I'm moving into Don territory, in fairness.
Everything I say about you, you take to mean about your weight. I was talking about you sitting in the pub taking 20s from everybody the other night.
All day. That was a nightmare. Doing the bets and then everyone only ever able to order off their phone. By the end of the night after you'd left, Craig, people were starting to struggle because everyone's phones had ran out of battery. Actually struggling to get a pint anymore. So everyone ends up getting stung.
Yeah, there's certainly flaws in that system.
So we got the venture, and eventually the woman by the end of the night was just accepting card eventually, which was good. But it was fun had by all apart from that result. And where did you watch the England game, Craig?
I was at the Croatia Czech Republic game with Craig Anderson. I live very close to Hampden, so we just came back to mine and watched it here.
Lovely.
Nothing too mental. I'm sure your night was much more eventful than that. What's been your favourite part of the England meltdown since?
It's been really good fun. I just don't know. They just really can't take it at all. They just have such a superiority complex over Scotland in general. I just love this switch of we're going to hump them, and then the comfort blanket of we are celebrating the 0-0. I just love how quickly we all do it. That's just a football fan thing in general. Don't get me wrong. I mean, I've probably done it in the past in another way. But it's just funny how quickly that can shift. I liked that video you posted of the guy scheming at the... Someone posted about guy scheming at the telly where Ryan Sterling had the ball and he was to pass it out to the right-hand side. Pass it, pass it, pass it, pass it. And eventually he dives at the end and he goes crazy. That was good fun.
What about...
Sorry, on you go.
Hey, get yourself a fucking sky scanner,
hey? Yeah, he was obsessed with sky scanner, that guy.
Get on your fucking sky scanner. You'll be booking the plane home fucking soon.
Well, we're playing at home, mate, for a start, so that's pretty good. Here we go. Go get the Gaza goal, as David Brent. I've enjoyed that immensely. It's just, it's good. Like, if nothing else happens this tournament, the fact that we gave them a bit of a bloody nose is at least some sort of fun after 23 years. At least we got to enjoy something. Even if we manage to leave this without even scoring a goal, which there is a chance.
We have a chance going into tomorrow's game against Croatia, Group D Euro 2020 clash. It's pretty much, we haven't made the knockouts yet, but we pretty much have a knockout tie here. The winner goes on to 4 points, and it's looking increasingly likely that there could be so many teams on 4 points that 4 points doesn't guarantee you going through. But still, as it stands, there's a pretty good chance of 4 points taking you through. The teams could draw and knock each other out as well, essentially. But I suppose the big news going into this game is that Billy Gilmore has tested positive for COVID. Now, we wish Billy well, but am I the only one in thinking that he won't be that big a miss after his 4 out of 10 first half performance against England?
Oh, on Sky Sports. Yeah, I mean, it was the fact that it wasn't just like 4 out of 10. They went into quite, he had like a decent little chunk of detail on why he was and how the game was passed him by, and people were running over the top of him, which bizarre. Maybe that was based on the very, very start of the game. I don't know. And then someone's switched off after that, and they've just made, I don't want to defend the person, but I feel like people can be all very guilty for that, is that someone gets off to a bad start, and then that's them pigeonholed for the rest of the game by that football fan, if you like. But
we also know that we also know secondhand that doing player ratings at the same time as writing a match report and two or three other things sometimes isn't really an easy thing to do. Say,
well, it's not conducive to good analysis. I think is the
write a paragraph on 22 different things.
People who are working hard and then firing out looking for opinion and stuff to try and cover all the bases, because it does. It seems ridiculous if you're doing the live reporting, you can't watch the game. The minute you look your head down and type, then it defeats the whole purpose. But that's maybe we're going into another thing about how your industry, Craig, has had money cut quite so feverishly that it makes it almost near impossible to do, certainly the sports side, to the degree that people would want you to.
Yeah, while trying to do more. Fewer people trying to do more things. But anyway, back to this game. And without my joking aside, Billy Gilmore was man of the match against England and is a big reason for raising the spirits going into this game, and now that's cruelly been taken away from us. So what do you think? Who do you think is going to start instead? I see a few different possibilities. Hendry could come back in and McTominay could move in there. Fleck could just be not a like for like in types in terms of player, but a like for like in terms of that position. Style. Don't disrupt the rest of the team. Or do you bring in someone like Christie and move McGinn a wee bit further back, but then do you want to keep McGinn on Modric? I don't know. What's your thing? Is I feel like the last two lineups were fairly easy to predict to a certain degree. Maybe like 90% of both lineups were pretty easy to predict. This one, I think he will probably go with everybody else if they're all fit and they're all 100% or whatever. They're not nobody's tired from the other night. But I find it really difficult to see who he's going to bring in here.
Yeah, it was a bit the brass eye quote of the child being left in the spacecraft with the paedophile. It's the one thing we didn't want to happen. Sort of struck a chord to me this morning when I woke up and I saw that Billy Gilmore had been taken out, and then group chats across the land. I imagine when someone done the fake one for Robertson and McGinn were close contact, but it was Scotland NTT.
Yeah.
And as we know, the Scottish national team aren't like Hibernian FC club. So that was found to be fake. But like I'll tell you what, my group chat when someone posted that and I found that it was fake, was there was a lot of anger in that, of that person maybe getting ejected from the room. in terms of what we're going to do, normally I think it would have been quite easy and we'd be thinking McTominay goes in and Cooper sort of replaces, or Hendry replaces McTominay. But I'm not so sure now, because as has been quite widely reported, McTominay hasn't had his best games in the centre of the park for Scotland. And then the second we went back to the back three, he's got a clean sheet against this, arguably, even if we get through, I mean, England could arguably be the strongest team that we actually come up against in this tournament. And we got a clean sheet, and we got a clean sheet well. It wasn't really that back to the wall. They stopped them getting with one shot on target in the whole game. So you say it seems difficult to see any manager really wanting to change the defensive makeup of the team off the back of that. So I do think it will be someone else. John Fleck, in terms of balance and what he does, seems the most obvious candidate, but I can already tell people won't like that. As we've found in the Scotland squad, and I mean, I'm as guilty as anyone, we've got members of the squad that people just don't like. and Stephen O'Donnell's sort of risen above that now, and he's fine. But there's other people. You've got the whole contingency that we've got a lot of ex-Celtic players in the squad. So that's like all Rangers fans are always on the brink of hating them anyway, regardless. And so I think Christie, people forget that Christie's been good for Scotland under Clark and everyone. So there's a, every time Christie plays, if it's not at the best, people attack him. And then there was O'Donnell, is pretty similar. People don't fancy him. And I get the feeling that, that Fleck would be the same. I think most people would have left. If we had everyone fit, Fleck would have been the one that you would assume would have got bumped, and Jack would have played. So I think sensibly, in terms of balance and the fact we had such a good performance and he might not want to change very much, Fleck seems the obvious sort of candidate for me, but people won't like it.
Can you see the any other changes being made? I mean, I think that, as I said earlier, I think unless there's somebody that's absolutely knackered and can't, then I think he's got to go with the same team.
Yeah, you've got to. Like I said, he made four changes after the Czech Republic game, which some obvious ones, like Tierney's fit, he plays, and that's like, there's no manager in the world that would try and pretend to be galaxy brain enough to not just do that. It's just that's a simple thing that he must play. But yeah, I think he was pretty brave with the Gilmore one, so it's sad that it's not going to continue. But yeah, I think after that performance, the feel good nature of the fans going into this at Hampden, who do you drop? Who do you look in the eye before the game, the biggest game in some of their guys' careers? Well, most of the guys' careers, really, and say that you're not playing after, because there wasn't anyone in that England game that was below an 8.
Yeah, but that's why I say fitness, and partly because we didn't make many subs in that game either. A lot of players ran themselves into the ground.
Fair point.
So it's quite a quick turnaround. I don't know. But at the same time,
I think momentum would carry anyone through at this time.
Yeah, it's all or nothing. Yeah, that you're right. Adrenaline and it being all or nothing right now. I mean, we'll take fitness issues in the next game if we get one. You know what I mean? So I think we're going to have to try and be brave on the ball again. I suppose we could talk about Croatia a wee bit, because I was at their game against the Czech Republic. I'm sure most of us would have watched them against England as well, and they've not really impressed. They're a team out of form at the moment, so they're still dangerous. We still know that they could easily put us away, but they've chopped and changed in the first two games. They're probably going to do it again, because they made two changes at halftime in this game against the Czech Republic, and they equalised instantly and didn't really do too much after that. So it wasn't as if, you can't even say that it was a masterstroke from the manager or the two players that came on really changed the game, because they scored within a minute 30 seconds of those guys coming onto the pitch, and the game, it just kicked off. I hadn't even settled yet to see if they could make a mark on it. So Rebic is out of form. Kramaric hasn't done much. Modric has played a lot deeper and hasn't got involved in matches as much as he usually does. Kovacic is quite good at progressing the ball, but still not really damaged any teams. They don't look that great at fullback. Versaico doesn't look the player he was. The left back, I can't remember his name, because G plays
Vardial,
for
Vardial, or
Vardial. I thought it began with G, but he plays for Dinamo Zagreb.
It begins with G, and it's G-V-A-R-D-I-O-L or something like that.
He's come in instead of Barisic. I don't know whether Barisic isn't fit or not, but he hasn't really caused much damage down that side. They really haven't been that great, and I keep caveating this, because I know that they could easily turn up, put a couple of goals past us and just shut us up, but at the same time, we couldn't. I mean, of all the great Croatia sides there's been over the last 20, 30 years or however long it's been, I suppose they've only been a country again for about 30 years, haven't they? This is about as good a Croatia side on form and ability, I think, as we could hope for, I think.
Yeah. I think it would be, I think Barisic is injured. I do think that is what I've heard. They'd be lunatics to not play, if he is fit, to not play him tomorrow. Scotland have been susceptible to conceding goals for set pieces in the qualifying campaigns.
I'm sure Stephen O'Donnell hasn't enjoyed playing against Borna Barisic season that's just passed.
And then obviously we play quite likely we're only going to play with one centre half. So cross balls is the kind of thing that you would be thinking. I mean, England didn't do anywhere near enough of that, in my opinion, on Friday. Actually put cross balls in the box and ask questions like that. So if you have Barisic and his ability
to cross it into,
yeah, again, Kane was half, Kane was dead. He was too deep inside Mr. Hanley's pocket. But so I'd definitely be paying Barisic. It's interesting you're saying about that goal, because I commented on this when I was watching it. It wasn't the goal of a team. It was a goal of a top player being very frustrated at what's going on around them and how this is all panning out for them, and just taking things into his own hands. And you know what? He takes the ball, he buys himself a yard, and he fucking lashes it.
Aye, and the keeper should save it.
Yeah, so it's that was, again, a top player getting very frustrated and just taking matters into his own hands, like I said. So there was nothing in that game that made me think that Croatia had upped their levels from the England game. In the England game, they were really safe, and it was so easy for, when I watched it, for Mings to like pick the ball. They play balls forward, and it would never be perfectly done. There'd be no supporting cast members when a forward was picking up the ball, and they just outnumber them. Against us, they are going to commit men, and I'd like us to play with a bit of pace somewhere, and it's not something we're really completely blessed with, because if we can hold on, I could see them getting quite desperate, because they'd be getting drawn with Czech Republic and getting beat off Scotland, or drawn with Scotland and going out. Sounds shit. If you're like, you know, like if you're a country like Croatia on paper and to the rest of Europe, that's like pathetic after getting to the World Cup final.
I think you mentioned Perisic there. He is one of the players that I'm worried about. I think he could do damage to the right hand side of our defence. If it's McTominay and O'Donnell, we're going to need another performance that they put in against England. Mm-hmm. If Perisic is at it, because he can be a match winner. That guy, he is the one guy that I'm worried about in this team. Modric can turn it on as well, but from what I've seen so far, he's playing very far away from the goal, and he's not really putting his mark on games like he has done in the past. So yeah, I think McGinn on Modric, we can nullify that. I think they've chopped and changed so much, and they haven't really got much form out of anybody up around side Perisic. So I think if we can nullify him as well, I think we're onto something. I think the big thing for us, though, is putting the ball in the net. We've to do anything, we've got to put the ball in the net at least once.
We're having shots on target. We're creating chances. So it would be really, really sad for us to go out here as an Achilles heel of just not being able to take our chances, because most people would have been thinking we'd be back to the wall for the three games and maybe creating a goal for a set piece, but it hasn't really played out that way. It was individual errors that sort of done us against Czech Republic, and then we were stretched, but we created plenty. I mean, I can't think of many Scotland games I've watched where we had so many like good chances. The Czech Republic game, and then the England game was a completely different performance than anyone expected. I think that's another reason why when people talk about celebrating a 0-0 draw, there's facets to that, because it's you're celebrating because you're still in the tournament, being the main one for me. Then there's a second one, is that you've stopped one of the best teams beating you. Then you add it's one of the best teams, it's also one of your biggest rival on the world stage. But then the next thing after that was because it was completely not how you expected the game to go, and that gave you sort of like you suddenly think your faith in the team went up in that moment. Is that
the performance? Exactly. The way we played.
Apart from that scramble at the end, because I remember I saw something the English media talking about. This is the moment that described the whole game, and that's absolute fucking nonsense. That was a one-time thing that just happened at the back of the scramble. That doesn't portray what happened in that football match whatsoever. So all those things is what I think gave the excitement levels to the Scotland fans after. And I'm another part of me that's a bit sad about Gilmore, apart from the obvious ones, because he looked like such a good player and he helps us keep the ball really well, which is exactly what made that performance happen. Let's be frank. He styles similar to Modric, Gilmore, and it would have been nice seeing him going up against a 35-year-old, 36-year-old Luka Modric, and maybe laying a marker down on him, and it's almost like a sort of passing of the torch moment. And I'm not saying it definitely would have happened, but I would have liked that. It was a narrative that could have been there. And Gilmore's like a younger, basically a younger version of Modric, where he can do a lot more snapping at the tackles, and his pressing is different, but the style can be quite similar, but being willing to take the ball into tight areas, dictate a whole game. So I'm a bit sad that that sort of narrative isn't there, like, because that would have been plastered all over the tabloids as a sort of like, if Modric had a shit game and Gilmore had been good, having them two and the pictures of them side by side during the game, or headlines of passing of the torch or whatever like that. And that would have been good fun, just because it's like a fucking Modric. You're even talking about a Scotland player. But yeah, there's other things. I mean, Lovren and Vida, I don't think they're bad players whatsoever. I mean, they've played at really high levels and they've been good. But again, they can be rash, and they're both very, very similar. So I think Dykes leaning on one of them, maybe Lovren and noising up, would be really good. But I think a third man running could be nice, because I could see Lovren goes, from what I remember watching for Liverpool, he likes to go wandering. He can be easily pulled out of position. He's rash. He likes to ball watch. And he gets, so if we can have someone committing like John McGinn, who's willing to maybe go in behind, and if Dykes pulls him out of position and someone actually go and vacates that area of the pitch and goes in beyond, then I reckon we could get chances from that.
But that's the best centre half in the world you're talking about, Tony.
Yeah. That's what he certainly thought of himself. I like Lovren. I like he's
exactly.
A bit spiky. I like that he's a bit spiky, but there's definitely he makes errors. It's just and so does Vida. When I watch them, that they're proper centre half. They're rugged guys. They want to play centre half, but that means that sometimes the concentration levels goes, because they strike me as guys who get very pumped before games, and that can work in the opposition's favour, as we've seen in the past. So it's going to be fucking great, because it's really good. I really hope that both teams know that a win is enough by the time, because it could be a proper ding-dong battle. And like I can say, like, the desperation levels could get high for teams, and that's what always makes out for sort of like really, really good, exciting games. And it'd be really nice for once in this, if we could go to a match like that where it's a proper ding-dong battle and somehow come out with a last-minute goal that puts us through. And after, it'll be absolutely fucking good. It is really exciting that we've managed to get to this stage and beating a what we're now calling a past it Croatia team. But the things that the announcement that would make to the rest of Europe in this tournament, if Scotland go ahead and sort of knock Croatia out, which would frankly be what the case would be, they'd knock them out and go through, it would be pretty spectacular, really.
A Croatia team in transition, not a past it Croatia team. Croatia is a part of the world that creates a lot of good footballers, usually. So finally, Tony. So
they also put paid to, they are also the kind of country that stops us. We always talk about our lack of options due to our small population, all that, and it's always countries like Croatia that would make you go
Uruguay, Belgium.
Yes, maybe not quite. You know, that excuse doesn't really wash, because it doesn't, these teams, countries seem to always at least have decent teams. Like, yeah. Obviously they have better ones at different times, but they never drop below a sort of certain level, and certainly never drop as low as we have in the last 20 years.
Yeah, exactly. Now, Tony, as is customary, we usually put a bet builder together for these previews. So what have you got for us? This is probably a difficult one, or maybe a difficult one to get decent odds for, because I would definitely, if it was me, I'd be back in few goals. I'd probably be avoiding the goal scorer market, because I think it's just, more than most matches, this was just a complete lottery who's going to get that goal. But what's your thinking on it?
Yeah, exactly what I'm thinking. I've done the one for Shea Adams to score, and unfortunately never made it, because the rest of that bet builder came in against England, the double chance, and John McGinn to get booked. That was, I honestly thought that John McGinn to get booked was the most obvious bet of this entire tournament.
Very early as well.
Yeah. So I've actually went for something that still allows for glorious failure, as is tradition. So I've went for Scotland to win the match by one goal. And as people will know, hopefully that will be enough, but there is every day it gets closer and closer to not being enough, which is sort of the most scary thing about this. I do like all the permutations because you forget, sometimes you just forget that we have to beat Croatia. You think that's the bit that's a given somehow.
And it's you all start these with that.
Yeah, I've just totally forgot that matters. And bloody, for crying out loud, is Turkey not scored? Fuck's sake. Yeah, like, it's all a complete fault.
And it'll be 1-1 and we'll both go out.
Yeah, that's probably what's going to happen. But come on. And so it's Scotland to win the match by one goal. And as I was talking about him there as being rash, he also got booked in the last game. Dejan Lovren to get booked. And just those two things, it's 30-1, which I thought were really big odds. And so just simple as that, Lovren to get booked and Scotland to win the game by a goal. 30-1. So
not bad.
On your head, be it.
Get your fiver on it.
I get your fiver on it. We'll have a nice time. That's what, £150 that would be. So great times. And we are getting together tomorrow to watch this, Craig, which I'm excited about. Some beer garden fun during the day and then into a dungeon bar in Edinburgh for hopefully some pandemonium, because I really feel like we deserve at least a goal to celebrate. Although the England game did feel like I was just celebrating one long big goal, because I was watching that and we were all pissed because we were out during the day. So it was just hubris and bravado.
One long VAR check.
Yeah. So it's hubris. Like, what always do in these games is you go in the start, hubris and bravado. So every player that plays for England is shit and you laugh at them all the time, and then you just wait until they score and then that
plays for Wolves.
Yeah, like that stops. But this case, the goal never ever came. So the bravado went up, and then the last 10 minutes came and it was just almost pure silence. But it is enjoyable watching a game in that manner because you celebrate everything. I mean, we were cheering completed passes in that game in the pub. Every tackle, every time an England player done anything that wasn't perfect was great. So wait,
were you cheering Stephen O'Donnell passes? Because I was getting to the point where I was having to stop myself from sounding patronising, but... The point was not just that he had gone from not looking very good on the ball to looking sensational on the ball. Sorry, that he became to be like going back to his par, to his level. He took it up a level. He was pulling off passes, like just casual kind of chips over England players' heads or cross-field passes and getting it right on target, like where he was aiming for. And I don't remember him putting any of them wrong. I mean, I said at one point to Craig during the game, we need to check Stephen O'Donnell's pass completion rate after this game, because he was just absolutely sensational the way he was knocking the ball about.
And yeah, because it was the ones, like you're saying, the dinked balls from wide into Adams or Dykes, they were hitting on target every time and they were always holding it up, and then we were able to play from there. And they're like really difficult balls to pull off all the time. And that happened really, really early in the game, like right from kickoff, something like that pass, and it came off. And almost felt like everyone's confidence went from there, like even in the pub, like straight away. And yeah, to see.
And the opposite happened. The opposite happened against Czech Republic for him. Like there was one shaky moment early on, and it kind of got in his head. And while Clark's right, he had a good defensive performance, there were still times where he. On the ball, technically, he was lacking, and I think it was more mental than anything else. I think he just got in his own head for a little while. It kind of... So, yeah, it's two different ways of set the tone for him, basically.
He shit himself in the Czech Republic game, because I remember there was a period where all he would do is pass back to the goalkeeper. Mm-hmm. I could see that was all he wanted to do, and he would just... It all got completely overwhelming. I made this point previously. It's like, well, O'Donnell, when he first came into the Scotland team, he was really poor. And then he had maybe three games where it really looked like it was out his depth. Then he settled, and then he was doing fine or doing well. Mm-hmm. And by the way,
the games where you're talking about he's out his depth, we're talking about the likes of Israel. And I'm sure it might not have been Albania, but there were one of the games I remember at Hampden was against Israel, and he was struggling in that game. There were a few games of that kind of level of opposition.
And then he's went into a tournament, which, while it can still be the same level, because you can still play in the same teams as you play in a qualifying campaign, but I just mean the status of it all is another level. And it feels like with O'Donnell, because he seems like a really lovely guy with a lot of humility, that maybe there's a bit of imposter syndrome he has to get over at the start. And then once he gets over that and he settles, then he's able to impose himself in the game, keep the concentration levels and not worry about something maybe going slightly wrong. And to the mental aspect, I don't think that even sounds crazy, because I'm sure, especially for a fullback, wingback, I mean, it's different for like sort of Kevin Nisbet, for example, or Lawrence Shanklin. They come in, these guys are, and they maybe aren't quite at the level that you would want. Okay, so maybe they are a bit, maybe imposter, right? I'm using them as an example rather than saying that they are, but they're strikers. They have a natural swagger, a natural confidence, and that other players don't have. But for O'Donnell, it was, I think he knew, he must know, obviously he spoke about it, and he spoke about it really eloquently and openly about it. And I really appreciated someone being able to do that, because I think there was that moment when he started speaking that, but everyone related to him at that point. I think everyone's understood what that feeling would be like, not to the same scale as he's talking about, but understanding people maybe not thinking you're very good at your job, or when you were at school maybe not being good enough to play in the school team or whatever. People would have experienced that feeling that he's talking about, and I really thought it was really important and brave of him to come out and do that, because I don't think a lot of players would have spoke in quite so openly about that, because you're really putting yourself on the line there. And I think he's also had that problem that he believes that people would be thinking he's Clark's sort of son, the old sort of Darren Fletcher at Man United, where Alex Ferguson calling him son, and some people thinking he shouldn't be there, he's only there because of that. And O'Donnell was that. So there, he's clearly, when he's talking about it, I love the fact he's admitting that there's all these things are going round his head, and it must be really tough. And I think it's another example, and we spoke about it on the podcast before. Human beings, man, and we are very guilty, all of us, on podcasts, in the pub, day-to-day life, in the office or whatever, of completely just forgetting that. Especially ones that are like on 1500, 2 grand a week. Aye, they've got good lifestyles, but they don't live in a completely different stratosphere from you or me. They understand what normality is. And I think we sometimes forget, and I think, and again, and I'm not talking about whether we like Nicola Sturgeon or whatever, but I actually quite liked her coming out and talking about O'Donnell, and that was quite a role model thing to do, is the way he was talking so eloquently about it. Because I do think I was, as I said, I related to him at that point. And I think it was one of those moments, like, anyone who watched that took a second to think, aye, maybe we should. Stephen O'Donnell, man, we're not talking about Paul Pogba or like Ronaldo, who water off a duck's back because they just go home and they've got their swimming in money. This guy is feeling it, he's hurting, and he's done something magnificent and then spoke to us all about it after. So it's great. It was great, really great.
It'd be better if her and her government didn't hate football, though, I guess. But he...
maybe, and Stephen O'Donnell's going to change that. Stephen O'Donnell's going to unite the SNP with football fans.
If anybody can do it, Stephen O'Donnell can. But yeah, I think we should leave it there, Tony. Anything else to add ahead of this game other than, come on, fuck Scotland.
Please, just give us that moment. I just really hope that before the game, we know a win's enough. That's really what I want. I don't want to be looking at permutations during the game. I just want to focus purely on, if they score one more goal than them, then we're going through, and that'll be what a day.
I also think, I don't obviously don't want us to go out, but if we get a draw, good performance, and go out, I think we can look back on the tournament and largely be fairly happy with ourselves as a kind of learning experience. The real quiz is to be qualifying regularly for the Euros. And if we can put this down, if we can do that and put this down to some sort of difficult learning curve, then I think that could be a good experience for a lot of these players, because I think the knee-jerk reaction against Czech Republic was, oh, we've absolutely fucked this. Mm-hmm. And then, and the kind of, when you sober up the next day, you kind of think, well, we actually played pretty well. We just couldn't put the ball in the net, and they had an expensive goal scorer that could. And then we put in an even better performance against England. Again, we can't quite put the ball in the net. So if we go out of this tournament with three good performances and we just fall short, I think we can still be happy with ourselves.
And then we've got the World Cup still coming, and then so Germany 2024. The thing is, it's a good time this time, because there's a tournament next year, then there's an R tournament in 3 years. So there's only 1 year in the next three that doesn't have a tournament. So if there was ever a time to get your confidence and feeling good about yourselves, then it could be a really great little period to be a Scotland fan, and we could get our comeuppance that we need. And I mean that in a positive manner. We deserve a little bit of love, and it'll be nice to get.
Definitely. Let's hope we get some tomorrow, Tony. But yeah, enjoy the game, and yeah, come on Scotland. See you all soon.
Great. Bye bye.
Oh, I'm going back to Loch Ness, yeah? Sports Social Podcast Network.